It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Alright, SW6!
SW5!
Which I expected, but it's still...
still made me angry.
Alright, we didn't watch a whole video, but I will put up the video... If I can find it, I did just get
it. Do you think we find it funnier because it's coming from someone with a British accent?
I constantly wonder this.
It has to be.
Because I find British... I don't know. Because I was going to say, I find British comedy so much funnier, but I don't know that it actually translates to like sitcoms, per se. I do like British sitcoms, and some of it is, besides finding them funny... I enjoy it culturally, you know, the whole anthropology aspect of it.
Right.
I enjoy that. But they're two separate things. When it comes to a lot of these comedians, I legit find them funnier than American ones. And I wonder. And I mean, British stand-up is a different animal.
Well,
there's literally a different... There are aspects to British stand-up comedy that are different from American stand-up comedy, and you can pinpoint what they are as general rules.
It just seems like in our culture, we're heavily, heavily conditioned to think of someone speaking with a British accent in a way that it sort of gives a serious...
Yes. More intelligent, often.
Studious air. Yeah, more intelligent. But also, I don't want to say unfunny, but it just... It's not a voice that, as an American, you're conditioned to expect something funny is going to come out of their mouth, basically.
Yeah, well, but I think
and then it does, and so that just makes it funnier.
I think this could be an accent thing overall. I think there's an exoticism to it. Because I think I found it with other people who have other accents.
Like Kumail has a little bit of an accent.
So I don't know. This is something I wonder about a lot because I watch a lot of British comedy now. But what's funny is you say we're conditioned to that sort of thing, and we are. But if you start watching a lot of British stuff, and really get into it. Not all British accents are created equal.
Yeah, that's true.
And once certain British accents have heavy baggage attached to them of just the opposite. There's British accents that are the equivalent of a Southern drawl and everything we associate with that.
Yeah, right.
And if you listen enough, you start to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll hear things, and like if they've got a certain accent, I'll be like, in my head, there's part of me that's like, oh, yeah, there's some Hicks or whatever.
The thing is, though, I'm constantly thinking when they say something, and I think it's funny, I'm constantly thinking about how I just really don't think I would have thought that was funny if an American said it.
It's hard. Accent is not just about the sound. Per se, the rhythm is also a factor.
Yeah,
and maybe inflection. That can be some of it you're going to get because jokes, rhythm in jokes is a big thing. And so maybe there are jokes that work in a British rhythm.
Let me give you an example. Like sometimes you'll be watching a comedy with a British person in it and they'll say, for comic effect, they'll say, ah, oh, bless him.
Yeah.
I could never hear an American person say that and think that's funny.
Yeah.
Necessarily, but when a British person says it, it's funny. Or like when what we were just watching, he said something about I just moved house. Well, that's convenient, isn't it? An American can say that, but the way he says it, the way a British person says it, isn't it, or whatever, you know, the little thing they say. It sounds funny, and it sounds funny to them because they're laughing at it.
Yeah,
but it doesn't seem like it would be funny if it was an
American. Yeah, I don't think that's unique to British. I think that might just be low-key racism. I think that might... No, and I'm not even really kidding. I think it might just be an exoticization.
That's possible,
is
I
that
suppose.
Really, that can't be the word, is it? Exoticization?
It's just funny.
Exoticizing?
Like, I find it funny when they say certain things that I don't think I'd think funny if an American said.
No, I absolutely feel the same.
Like,
very much. What cracks me up is I've taken a lot of Britishisms because I watched so much of this stuff. Well, I talked last week, aka 20 minutes ago for us, about how I said takeaway instead of carry out or anything like that. But I do find some of them I can't say with an American pronunciation. And the one that really stands out for me is there's a phrase that's can't be arsed. Which can't be bothered, basically.
Oh, okay.
And because in Britain, it's arse. It's A-R-S-E, mm-hmm. not A-S-S. Mm-hmm. But frequently with a British accent, it sounds the same.
Mm, okay, sure.
But like I've heard people, Irish dialect particularly, will say can't be arsed. But I mean, technically what I should be saying is can't be assed. And I won't. I don't. When I say it, I say can't be arsed, yeah. Which is neither what an American would say or how a Brit would pronounce
right,
it.
Right,
so I'm in this weird hybrid place, but it just absolutely doesn't feel right to me to say asked, and it would feel weird to just say that word in an accent. Like, that would be strange. So that gets tricky. Every once in a while, mate slips into my vocabulary, and that always sounds weird to me.
Well, another example of this, because, you know, they tried to make a lot of British shows, American versions of British shows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
frequently failed.
I don't think they're very good.
I mean, there are some that were, I mean, All in the Family was copied off of a British show. Three's Company was copied off of a British show.
Well, like, but the
modern versions.
I've tried to watch The American Office, and I can't really get into it.
It's a very different show. It's definitely, on the same grounds, it is not as good. No, I agree.
But when I hear some comedians talk about Britain and the British, like Oliver, what's his first name? John Oliver.
Yeah.
He'll often. So when he talks about the Britain and the British, some of the things he says makes me think that some of the reasons I think this thing is funnier coming out of a British person, they think it's funnier coming out of a British person.
Hmm.
Like, there's something about the British culture where the way John Oliver describes it in particular, because he's constantly making fun of them in terms of not being able to express certain emotions whatever.
I mean, there are definite cultural differences, so that there are jokes about British things that are only funny because they're British.
Yeah, right.
Class-based structure is much more. They talk about class the way we talk about race. So, for instance, any jokes, and I mean,
but also understatement.
I don't like racist jokes, but you can make jokes related to race that are quite funny. Those wouldn't work if Brits were doing them, because race relations is different.
I see what you're saying.
And they have, I mean, they have jokes literally about. There's a guy who, based largely on his accent and his upbringing that caused the accent, is known as like a working class guy, and he talks about how he married this woman, and he's like, I'm middle class now because I married this woman, and okay, she was upper class, but she married me, so now we're both middle class. And I'm like, that joke has no corresponding American equivalent. I mean, we all understand the words and we can laugh at it, but that doesn't have meaning in an American situation.
Well, there's also
emotional components, restraint, modesty,
understatement,
standing in lines,
self-deprecation.
Yeah,
which you get some American comedians do, but it's so much more potent when it comes out of a British person for some reason. But it's weird because sometimes when I'm appreciating British humor, I feel like there's a part of it that I recognize from my own family experience. Like, my dad's side of the family comes from heavily British stock. Mm. But of course, they weren't British.
No, they were
American. But sometimes, like, there are some things that John Oliver says about being British that I totally can relate to.
Oh, yeah, no, you'd get along really well in Britain.
So, some of it that I think British humor is funny because I actually feel like I relate to it, even though, you know, obviously I'm not British and my parents weren't or anything like that. But maybe the fact that my dad's part of the family, almost all of them, you know, a few generations back were British, that has some impact. I don't know.
It could definitely be. It could also be the coincidence. I mean, it could also be there are values that happen to be big in your family that also happen to be big in British culture.
Sure.
Because, I mean, the values we're talking about are not alien.
No, That's true. That's absolutely true. Yep, that's right.
But I could see that. But I think you'd fit in very well over there. But it is interesting also because Britain is in such a unique position, being a separate sort of island nation, speaking English as the Americans do and all that, but also being part of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
That there is a very, Britain's a little bit like if you mixed America and the European continent together in weird ways, and a lot of Brits would hate me for saying that.
Well, but there's also that aspect where at one time Britain was the largest empire that had ever existed.
Yes.
And that's
yes. And there is an equivalent in the US, but it's different because it's present day.
Yeah.
But that's another major component to British culture. And in fact, I think I talked about it before. There was this British Indian sketch show that I used to watch there that was called Goodness Gracious Me. And it was really what In Living Color was for African Americans. This was that for British Indians.
Mm.
And a very common go-to was flipping the whatever the traditional thing was. They had one where there was one token white guy at this Indian television company, and he kept trying to get more British representation in their shows. And he'd say, like, why don't we have British films? And they're like, Brits have film? The English have films? And one of them's like, yeah, I saw one time. It was terrible. It was only 2 hours long, and it had no dancing. There is a classic one, and this one only works really if you're British and you understand the British relationship to Indian food, where a bunch of Indian people get drunk and party at night or whatever, and afterwards they go out for an English.
So not a curry?
Exactly. And you have all these components where they're like ordering things, but they want you to change it significantly. There's one that's like, what's your blandish dish? I want that. There's one who's like, can I just have the chicken curry? Because honestly, every British pub has a chicken curry. And they're like, no. The whole point of going out for an English... And they mispronounce the words. They order way too much food. At the end, they're like, and there's like five of them. He's like, and 27 orders of chips. And things like that. Yes, that same sort of thing.
It seems significant that not only was Britain the largest empire that had existed to that point, but it was really the last empire of its kind, really.
Well, it was the last time when you could just openly colonize.
Well, yeah.
Nowadays, you had to do it under the guise of other things, but it was the last time where you could just go around and be like, this country, ours now.
I mean, there's still colonialism and imperialism,
absolutely,
but it's different.
But it's
kind.
All under the, we're liberating them, we're helping them.
Or corporate, it's yes, corporations.
Exactly.
Or,
this was back where we're like, no, this is now essentially Britain.
Yeah, and a lot of the other empires had long since failed or were in decline.
Yeah.
But Britain was still going strong in, you know, well into the 19th century, I suppose early 20th century.
Yeah,
so,
the 20th century.
So
it was the 60s before India.
Yeah, so that's kind of amazing when you think about it, that it was kind of the last of its kind, and it wasn't that long ago.
I might be wrong about that number, but it was somewhere in the mid 20th century.
Either way, it wasn't that long ago.
Well, I think I talked about this.
In living memory, it was still that.
There was an episode of Doctor Who in this last series that what they went to a place and they found out they were there the day of the partitioning of India, which is a pretty big history. And admittedly, the Brits I've talked to, they don't remember the date either. But, like, it's a big deal in British history. And it is not anything I had heard of. We had to look it up. And it's the day when the Brits brilliantly decided, you know what? India's got problems because it's got Hindus and it's got Muslims. I know, we'll make it into two countries. One will be full of Hindus, we'll call it India. One will be full of Muslims, we'll call it Pakistan.
Right.
and hijinks have ensued ever since. And then it actually has to do with they made Pakistan in two pieces, which was dumb as hell, where they broke it up. And eventually the other piece of Pakistan became Bangladesh.
But this was much later. When was this?
54.
Right. After World War II.
Yes, but before Indian independence.
Right. But let's think about that for a second. That happened after World War II. The Nation of Israel happened after World War II.
Yep.
A lot of the other, a lot of things happened after World War I in the Middle East in terms of, because during World War I, a lot of deals were made. Britain and other European powers made deals with Arab agitators against the Ottoman Empire, promising them independence and then didn't give it to them and carved up the Middle East.
Yep, yep. But a tradition that continues to this day.
But a lot of things that conflicts that exist today, and I don't know, maybe some people don't realize that tensions between Pakistan and India really have really heated up recently because of a terrorist attack. You know, there I've heard people sometimes talk about these things like Israel and India and Pakistan and these things, and you know, be very frustrated that these conflicts are so serious, right? And that people can't seem to agree on anything. But these things, I mean, there are people alive who remember when these things started.
Yes.
This isn't that long ago. And
it's one of those things where, like, it's been, but it's also been going on long enough that, like, every side has fucked up.
Yeah, yeah, right.
It's like, you can just, the way you pick who's right is to just pick at what point you want to pick. Because it's like, well, at this point, Palestine did horrible shit. Yeah, but at this point, Israel did horrible shit.
Right.
Now everybody's doing horrible shit. And Jimmy Carter was very big on, if you're going to make peace there, it has to be drawn on the lines of the Treaty of 1969, which I very much believe with, which is why I have been in recent years very critical of Israel.
And a lot of people have been.
Yes.
But
and a lot of other people have been saying that's anti-Semitic. And it's like, no.
Well,
it's not the Jewish people. It's the government of Israel. They are two separate things. There's a lot of overlap there, but they're separate things.
I think sometimes people, I mean, when people look at how normalized relationships have become with Japan and Germany, right, since World War II,
yeah.
I mean, it's practically like it didn't even happen in some ways. I think they think that, well, so what's the problem with these places? And it's like, we can't really judge, at least I don't feel like we can. When I look at the Middle East and even in India and Pakistan, I guess I don't think that all this stuff started very long ago.
No,
it seems to make perfectly good sense that things would be this messed up still.
Even Eastern Europe, because remember a little something called Yugoslavia?
Yeah, right.
Remember a little something called Czechoslovakia?
Well, and think of Crimea right now and all that
absolutely,
stuff. Yeah, that's true.
Absolutely.
That's right.
And to their credit, this is some shit they taught me in schools. They said part of the problems for World War II was they drew up all these weird boundaries after World War I, and they based them on natural geography.
Mm.
And not remotely on ethnicity.
Cultural or anything.
Yes. And I mean, and this is how you get the Armenian Genocide, and this is how you get so many of the shitty things they're happening in Turkey right now, and everything that's happening in Syria. I mean, and people have very short memories on these things.
But it gets problematic though too, because I've heard some people who look at all this, you know, like, again, I'm saying these things didn't start too long ago, so I'm not really that surprised that they're still messed up. That it makes sense to me that they are. And then someone points to, say, Japan and Germany, and I say, well, you can't. Based on a couple exceptions, you can't form that kind of rule. But then what will further be argued is, oh, I know the difference with Germany and Japan, American occupation in those places after the war. See, that's what you have to do. You have to have a strong country move in and establish themselves. But I don't like that idea either.
No.
And
reason that works is because then you don't let them do their own thing. I mean, Japan still doesn't have a standing army.
Which raises the question, does it really, quote-unquote, work? I mean, it works for us.
And this is when you get into the arguments about policing the world.
Yeah.
And all this kind of shit.
I mean, it works for us. It works for some people. But does it really work for Japan?
No.
And did it really work for Germany? I mean, Germany's in pretty good shape right now in a lot of ways. But
but Germany's dealing with a lot of the same racial tensions that are dealing with and that the UK is dealing
with.
That's
right. That's right.
But there is hope. I like looking at Northern Ireland. And it's not like everything's hunky-dory there now, but there's some blood-chilling shit that happened there.
Oh my gosh,
for
yes.
generations.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And it's mostly done. I mean,
for now,
still have issues? Yeah, I mean, Brexit.
Who knows what Brexit's going to do?
Although, I don't want to talk about bugs. Holy shit. That's getting weird. I've been talking to Stu about how as he's becoming more American, I'm slipping into being more British. And one of them is like, I have such strong opinions about Brexit. But it's funny because so much of this I get from panel shows and stuff. So I happen to think every single British politician is an idiot. Because that's the only time it comes up in conversation is people making fun of them.
Mm.
Like, I don't watch these comedy panel shows and people talk well of the
politicians. Yeah, right.
And I was like, they're probably not all as bad as I think. Because right. that's my whole... But, like, I have really strong opinions about Brexit. And, hello, everyone. Welcome to the manic half of my evening, clearly. this is what happens after I've been tired for an hour. The Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world, I don't always have funny things, people. It's the only podcast in the world that has us right here in this specific time and place and situation and all that. Anyway, I want to talk about something else.
Okay.
Something else is bugging me.
Okay.
About work.
Okay.
Been talking a lot about work. I'm going to get fired. And I'm going to keep this vague, which is really easy to do because the information I have on it is very limited. So I have to keep it vague, so it works well. So, at work, we are working with a piece of software. I don't know if we're working with the company who made it, or if we just bought license to it, or maybe we're involved in it. I don't know. But something, part of our job is involving this piece of software.
Sure.
It involves math. I don't have a lot to do with it. It's an acronym name for it, as so many things are. The acronym is IGOR. I don't know what it stands for, but that's the acronym.
Okay.
How do you think you pronounce that?
IGOR?
Yes.
Oh, Igor, something like that.
Why something like that? Why do you not have a specific answer?
Because, like, the name I've heard pronounced either one of those two ways, I guess. Igor or Igor.
Where have you heard Igor?
Where have I heard it?
Yes.
I don't know, a film maybe, or I think I've seen like a video presentations by people with that name who pronounced it that way themselves.
There might be a British thing because Trish was looking this up, and there's a character with that name in Harry Potter and Goblet of Fire, and apparently in Stephen Fry's version of it, he pronounces it that way.
Igor?
In the audiobook, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah. Other places, no, it's Igor, people. And they pronounce it Igor, and I'm very mad at them about this, because why have that acronym if you're going to mispronounce it?
But I've heard people pronounce it Igor before.
Those people are wrong. Also, you are absolutely undermining the shit out of this bit
no,
right
no,
here.
No, come on.
No, completely.
You have never heard Igor before.
Only by wrong people.
Oh, okay, well.
It's Igor, and I know he's not in the original book or whatever, but he's a famous character now, and his name is Igor. I'll tell you when you've heard Igor. Was in the Mel Brooks thing.
It was in that, sure.
Yes, as a joke.
No, that's...
Same way
that's,
as Frankenstein.
That's not the only place, same, though. That's not the only place.
Wrong.
No, I'm pretty sure I've heard a person named Igor pronounce it that way.
They're wrong.
Why is that wrong?
It's Igor. That's how it is. And if you have that acronym, that's what you should be doing. Because not only are you using it wrong, but you have it. Nobody else, like, they can't have the same acronym because then we might confuse the products. So you're just wasting it now. Nobody can use it. It's terrible.
Okay.
If you'd like to help me point out to William how wrong he is, go to the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com. You are a horrible improv partner. I can't even believe it.
I didn't know we were doing improv.
We're always doing improv. Every moment of my life is improv. My wife understands this. My coworkers, how do you not understand this? I'm never not doing improv.
I don't know.
Alone, I'm doing improv. I do bits with my cats when nobody's here. It's always a thing.
Your cats are good at yes and.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. But it didn't always... I trained them.
Okay.
They didn't start that way. I got this thing going right now with Eddie. Like, when he likes to attack and stuff, like, he still likes to fight a bit. And it's playful. But, like, with the, like, if I'm petting him up there, he might be like, ah, I'm going to get you. And he gets... So I got this thing now when he tries to get me with his paws, I just hit it with my hand. I just go, high five, high five, high five. So he gives me a lot of high fives now. He doesn't know it. But he's doing that face plant thing again. Yeah. But facing away from us at the time. That's weird, dude.
It's weird.
You have enough problems breathing. Don't add to that. Well, fine. I mean, what are you talking about? How was Shazam?
I don't know. I mean, you know, this has been kind of annoying lately. So a lot of, I don't know who started this. Some film kind of recently, maybe it was Aquaman, I don't know, had like a sneak peek that like thousands of people in the United States could go see the movie 2 weeks ahead of time.
Yeah. My Trish's boss saw it already.
Yeah, right.
Saw Shazam.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
He said it was pretty good.
This is a thing that I think Aquaman did it, maybe some film before did it, and so now other people are doing it. But what it's caused to happen is that now reviewers, and especially like on like YouTube reviewers like I like to watch, since there's a significant number of people who have already seen it, they'll post all of their stuff about what the ending meant. And it's like, wait a minute, the film's not even out yet. Don't be talking about the, you know, summarize. I mean, of course I could just avoid them, but it used to be that you might see a review a couple weeks ahead of time, but they weren't going to post what does the end of the movie mean until maybe 2 or 3 weeks later.
Yeah, and even just, I'm so tired of people saying, like, this isn't a spoiler, but there is shit that is in headlines
that they have intentionally avoided
spoilers. I'm like, no. Well, and the example I would give here is, what does the ending mean? That already tells me there's, like, a significance to the ending that's going to be leading up to something. And, like, and I know that's a minor spoiler, but it's still a thing.
Look out for the twist. It's like, well, I didn't know there was a twist until you said so.
This is why I really want to go see Us in the theater.
Because you're afraid someone's going to spoil
it? Because the internet's already talking about it a lot. And, I mean, I haven't... The closest spoiler I've had so far is apparently there's nothing in the plot that requires the family to be black, even though they are black. It's purely a representational issue. Hmm. Whereas, like, in Get Out,
it mattered,
race really mattered. And I'm like, that's fine. But I'm like, but it's getting closer because people are talking about it. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Well, it's just, like I said, all of the entertainment journalist thing that I watch.
Apparently, Zach Levi doesn't have the kid who plays the little boy just inside the costume with him all the time.
Well, but I mean, they always post things like this, but like I said, it's usually 2 or 3 weeks later after everyone's had a chance to see it. But now that they've got this thing going where maybe thousands of people have already seen it.
Especially because fucking YouTubers don't care.
And they'll post it, and I'm like, why are you posting this now? This has not been officially released. So that kind of annoys me. But you know,
well, supposedly there have been studies and spoilers don't actually hurt our enjoyment of things and in fact can improve them in some cases.
I've heard that, yes.
And, I mean, it's so hard to tell because I feel bad when I hear the spoiler. So, and also you can't do it twice, so you can't know.
Well, I
can't be like, well, I'll go back and watch this as though it wasn't spoiled.
I've heard that study before and my only answer to that is, I don't care. I personally, this is part of my enjoyment of it. If there's some objective measure where you can say, hey, you actually enjoyed this a little bit better by knowing, but that's not what I want. You know what I'm saying? It's not a matter of, I don't think people always make decisions about what they want based on some objective measure of what is going to make them feel better. It's a particular experience they want to have.
Weird sentence coming from you.
I want to be surprised.
I spent most of our friendship explaining to you why people weren't making the rational best decision of things. So I
no,
find this really interesting.
No, what I mean is, what people... The thing is, when you say that, I already know that's true. What often confuses me is they'll tell me what their rationale is, but it doesn't make sense. I mean, they'll tell me what their reason is for doing something, but that doesn't seem to fulfill the reason. I don't presume to know what a person's rationale is, But if I ask them or if they indicate what their rationale is, then I expect they're going to act in accordance with that rationale, and they often don't. That's what confuses me. And I want to be surprised. I don't want to know if...
Well, yeah, there's I don't other care components. What, it's like, can I guess what the twist
will be? Yeah, yeah, right. Like that. Now, again, if you test me and you say, but you, by this measure, you enjoyed this more knowing, I don't care. What I want is, like you said, to be able to guess or to be surprised or whatever. That's what I want. So you telling me that I'm going to enjoy it, quote unquote, better this other way means nothing to me.
Kind of like when you tell me it's pronounced Igor.
No, it can be pronounced Igor.
Means nothing to me.
Igor or Igor, can be, it, either Guy. Way it can be pronounced.
Guy.
Well, I've heard it both ways. And not just in Young Frankenstein either.
It's because you hang around with terrible people.
I hang around with you.
Yeah.
Mostly. My wife and you. That's pretty much
How does your wife pronounce it?
Igor, Call probably. Her.
Well, then what the fuck is wrong with you?
Nothing. Clearly, I mean, I say nothing. Actually, a lot of things.
I'm looking up spoilers on Shazam right now.
I mean, that's one of the reasons.
I'm going to get you.
That's one of the reasons why I've had trouble sleeping lately. We talked about it for everyone else last week about creative stuff, because that's one thing. It's like, I'll be lying in bed and I'll be thinking.
By the way, this is part two episode, so if you don't know what's going on, that's because you didn't listen last week. Go back.
There are a lot of times I'm lying in bed where I'm thinking, I don't want to be lying here in bed. I want to be writing right now, you know. And I'm tempted sometimes just to get up and do it. But also...
I don't have that. I'm like, I want to be lying here and sleeping right now. It's not fucking working.
I don't want to sleep. But lately also, it seems like for whatever reason, I've been spending an inordinate amount of time lying awake, you know, rehearsing all of the things I've done that I regret and all this other stuff, which I know that happens to a lot of people. But lately it's been happening to me a lot more for some reason. I don't know if it's something about the time of year or what. That probably doesn't happen to you, though. I mean, I know it. I've heard from other people that happens to them. They kind of rehearse things that they regret or wish they hadn't done.
It did when I was younger. It doesn't happen as much now, except a very specific subset. I replay arguments where either, in retrospect, I feel I didn't argue the case well enough, or in some cases, I never had that argument with them, and I should have. And I'll give you a great example. Had it this morning. Have this one a lot. I try and explain why I am opposed to the fundamentalist Christian belief about how if Jesus is not your Lord and Savior, you go to hell. And it's not with a specific person, but often I have one in my head. I've known a few people who believe that.
Okay.
And I lecture them on it or whatever. And the same thing. I have done it, I'd say, at least 100 times. I've had the same thing because it frustrates me.
Mm.
But I know it is inappropriate and unhelpful to have that conversation with them. And it just runs in my head.
Interesting.
And I think about it, it's vaguely megalomaniacal is what it is. It's all the times that people said or did or thought or believed dumb shit. And because I don't just rule them with an iron fist, I couldn't figure it. I learned that some people who are friends of friends, like I barely know them,
mm-hmm.
Were Trump supporters. And I hadn't realized this. I was not engaged in their life enough that I would have guessed that was their politics. I have had several situations where I have, in my head, lectured them on why that is insane and why the hell would you do that. And just things like this. An argument I had with my mother over the point at which transgender individuals should appropriately transition or not. Or should be able to appropriate their transition or not. It's a kind of thing involving puberty and all that kind of thing. And the conversation did not go super well.
Mm.
But I mean, it's fine. It didn't mess us up or anything. But like, I will replay that sometimes and argue it again in my head. I don't know why I do this. I don't like this. It comes from a place of privilege. It comes from this desire that I should be able to express myself perfectly because I'm clearly right, and the fact that you didn't see that means I didn't say it right. And yeah, just over and over and over again, the same ones often. And so I do those, but I don't do a lot. I don't do a lot of regrets. There are certain things that if for some reason you get me thinking about those things, I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. But no, not so much anymore because, I mean, I don't.
Well, for me,
all I can do at this point is learn from them. You know?
Yeah, I go over outcomes that weren't very satisfying and wondering if I should have done things differently. I go over, you know, there are certain people I remember from my life, and I remembered pretty much everybody, and where I don't think, I suspect that if, like me, they were sitting here today thinking about me, that the feelings they get from thinking about me aren't altogether positive.
Yeah.
And I hate that. I just hate it. And I don't like whatever I did to make that true. And I wish I could do something to fix that. Not for myself at all. I mean, what's it really do to me on my day-to-day basis? But for them, I don't like that they have anything in their life that gives them an unpleasant experience, especially if it's whenever they think of me. You know, or other things where I look at the impact I had in someone's life or lack thereof, and it's like, you know, sometimes I think about a good example there is my mom, you know. I don't. This one isn't as frequent because, you know, I've kind of gotten over some of this stuff, and, you know, a lot of it's irrational, of course, but I sometimes think, well, what if I'd been a more successful person, you know, and I could have maybe helped mom and dad get into a new house sooner. And maybe if she was in a newer house, she would have taken care of her health better. You know,
yeah.
I just think of 1,000 things that I could have done as a son that might have helped her make different choices where she wouldn't have passed away.
Missed
so
opportunities
so, yeah.
are tricky ones, especially when you're convinced, like, you know what, that really is, if I had just done this, that would have been different. I mean, to the degree that, you know, I love my wife. I'm so happy I ended up with my wife. I still look at failed romantic relationships and how I might have at least stopped that particular way that it, and I'm like, and then what? You would have married them? Come on. But I still think about it because it's a missed opportunity. Again, used to do that more. I think somewhat conscious, I don't know, have worked on trying to change that to, you know, it's done. What do you learn from this?
Sure, right.
Going forward. But I mean, what it mostly comes down to is I'm happy with my life. Pretty much all around. There are things I'd like to work on, and some of them I am and some of them I'm not, but like my life where it is, I'm pretty happy with it. And the times when I'm not happy, it's very much like a depressive thing. So it has nothing to do with how my life is, just everything sucks.
Well,
so there's not a lot of room for that shit.
Weirdly, when these episodes happen, maybe I've mentioned this before, it's when I do feel good about my life. Because the very next thought after the thought, I'm pretty satisfied with how my life is to wonder if the other people whose lives I've interacted with, if they're satisfied with their life. And I'm concerned about that. And then it immediately leads to, well, if this person isn't satisfied with their life, I've contributed to that somehow. I mean, not all people, obviously. I mean, yeah. There are some people who I know aren't satisfied with their life, and it's not my fault, you know. But there are some people, and I don't know whether they're satisfied with their life or not, but I know if they think about their life and evaluate it, or I feel pretty confident that if they look at their life and evaluate it, if they're dissatisfied with it, and they enumerate all the things that they're dissatisfied with, their experience with me is one of those things, and I don't like that. And I feel like I feel a little guilty, I guess, for having a good life, a life I'm satisfied with, when I don't feel like in my life I've contributed much to other people being satisfied with their lives, or I haven't contributed enough to other people being satisfied with their lives. So I feel like I'm getting all this. I mean, this is something I've experienced my whole life, long before I knew anything about white male privilege or whatever. I felt like I had a privileged life. I mean, you know, my family was close. We didn't have a lot of money, but that didn't matter. And I knew that I was getting something from the world that other people weren't getting. I didn't quite understand at that time that some of that was because I was a white person or anything like that. But I knew it was true. And maybe that's why when I got older, I was open when you know, a black friend of mine explained to me how some of the privileges I got were because I was white. And, you know, when I could see these things. But it sometimes I feel, you know, I look at my life and how much privilege and stuff there is there. And I feel bad that I have been so lucky in my life to have so many great things. And other people I'm not better than they are. You know what I mean? I'm not more worthy than them, but they don't have what I have. And it just doesn't make any sense. There's a profound injustice in it, I guess. And I know it always makes me feel really bad. Not always, but sometimes really bad. And it keeps me up at night sometimes even.
Yeah, that's messed up.
Well, it's just...
I mean, it's the...
I know. Like I said, it's not really rational. I mean, there's a good side to it. I think it sometimes motivates me to be involved and stuff like that. But there's a point to which it's not good at all. It's not helping anybody. It's particularly not helping me. But...
No, it's very much not helping you. But yeah, at a certain point, it's damaging to other
people. Yeah, to other people also. That's right. That's right. So
there's a presumption of influence in there.
Yeah. Right. So, but...
And I mean, we always need to be aware of these things. It's good that you know and accept these things.
But there's a balance that needs to be struck.
And also the realization that all that privilege means is that you have a responsibility.
That's right.
You didn't create that privilege.
No.
You have a responsibility to act with that in mind, to do what you can to dismantle that when possible, things like that.
Yeah, and I...
But you don't... The privilege is not your fault.
No, I know that, but it's...
And the goodness that has happened in your life is not because of things you did at the... You didn't walk on other people.
No. But I just wish... It's not like I've been a school teacher for 30 years and feel like I've given something back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I've always done is what I can. And I don't think that I should be... I don't think I've just been sitting around doing nothing, but... You know, you just look at your life and you think, I just wish I'd made better choices here and there. Like, what if I had chosen to be a school teacher instead? Would I feel better? Would I feel like I was in a better place? Of course, I know a lot of school teachers who don't feel better, who feel worse even for having put themselves in a system that doesn't work. And not only do they not think they've helped anybody, they think that by not doing anything to make the system different or maybe working in a different system, they've contributed to making it worse. So I don't know. It's hard. It's hard if you want to make the world a better place and you get to be my age and you have tried, you've definitely, put in the effort and it just doesn't look like, it just doesn't seem like a lot of good has come out of it.
And just play it forward as much as you can.
Yeah, right. I mean, right.
It's, and again, you say this is irrational. I mean, you know, phobias are irrational, things like that. Like, I don't want to invalidate your feelings.
Well, it shouldn't be keeping me up at night. I mean,
you feel what you feel.
Yeah, I know.
And that's and that's also not your fault and not something. But in the strictest sense, it should never be a question of what if I had, because you didn't.
No, right. That's right.
It can be a question of, given that, maybe I should now.
You're right.
So, I mean, in the simplest example, not what if I had been a teacher, you weren't. You didn't. Done. Right. Now you can ask, what if I want to be a teacher now?
Sure, right.
And that's a thing. And that is all productive.
Well, it...
Whereas the other one is very much not productive.
Except, again, I think age is coming into it in a way where it maybe hasn't in the past, right? Like
Yeah. Like, and I relate to that. I relate to that.
As you say, like you were saying... You think, well, no, I didn't do that, but maybe my reflecting on that I should have done something like that means I can maybe do something like that now. Oh, but yes, but I'm 50.
Fucking A, yeah.
I'm 50. I haven't been in the normal regular job market for over a decade. You know, it's like, that's probably not an option. But that's not necessarily true either. I mean,
No, but there are things like that. Yeah. Like, and it's certainly a different answer. When I think about, like, I could go back to school. Yeah, I could. At this point, that would be hard in a variety of new ways.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know if...
That's definitely a thing.
So maybe that's what it is. It's like, you know...
And I mean, you're allowed to feel sad for things.
No, I know, but...
I don't know, because the thing is, I want to keep telling, because I honestly, I understand these feelings. I have had these feelings. I don't often have them now. And I think that's a good thing. And I want to be able to tell you what I'm doing so that I don't. And I don't know.
Well, I think...
There's a lot of shit in my life that just eventually my brain got where I've always wanted it to be. I don't know how.
I think this type of thing, you just kind of have to let it work itself out.
Yeah.
It's kind of... It's like mourning. You know, what you shouldn't do... is push it away or you've got to deal with it, but you've got to let it.
You have to make sure it's a process.
Yeah. Yeah. Process.
And not just a loop.
That's right. That's right.
And I mean, don't get me wrong. I got shit. I still,
well, and I'm sure for me, that's complicated by the fact that, you know, I raised kids and you know, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Complicated. Also, you know, it's difficult for me to talk about this because I've thought about, you know, I've dealt with issues of mortality and what my life would be like when I'm very old and after I'm gone my whole life. But it is something different when you're actually 50 thinking about these things instead of 30.
As it should be.
And
I,
when you start to
I know you're a very thoughtful and intelligent person, but I feel like it's almost better to assume that the conclusions you've reached about life's milestones and shit when you were younger are probably wrong because you were younger.
True. I mean, I don't know how wrong, not as accurate as I might have thought at the time, right. Obviously. But what I mean is now when I think of, okay, so my wife and I are living alone in this house. The kids aren't really in our lives. I don't know if their kids will ever be. So I guess we have to start thinking in terms of this house won't go to anybody, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what are, you know, I mean, you kind of have to start thinking of what the next 20 years are going to be like in a completely different way than you ever have before.
Oh yeah.
And it would be different still if the kids were more involved. That would be a whole different plan.
It would be a different set of...
Yeah, questions. A whole other thing. But they're not, which is a surprise in a way, right? It's not...
Oh, yeah.
It's not
what you were expecting.
Exactly. So that's not a way I've ever thought about it before. And so now I have to think of things in a way I didn't anticipate I would have to think about them. And it's not happy. I mean,
absolutely.
It's not fun to think about.
And as long as you're progressing... I mean, the only issue... You know, whatever you do and whatever you feel is valid. The only issue is if it makes you unhappy, then you have to change what you're doing. Not what you're feeling. You can't change what you're feeling. What you're feeling will change or not. You don't really control that so much. You have to change what you're doing. So if the way you're approaching or thinking about something is continuing to make you feel bad, then... It's not like, well, if I try it harder,
you got to find a new approach.
Right. And sometimes that is hard. I'm still struggling with my blood sugar. I'm getting better lately, but like Monday, no, probably Tuesday night, I ate a box of Girl Scout cookies before bed.
A whole box?
A whole box.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
Did you feel okay afterwards?
No, I did not feel good
at
all.
Yeah, I'll bet not.
And this was after I had just had some issues with my blood sugar that I think may have kept me home from work on Monday. It was dumb as hell. And I mean, and these are problems I struggle with. But that's not... I know what I need to do there. Yeah. Not eat a box of Girl Scout cookies. Like, that's not me. I keep eating Girl Scout cookies and my blood sugar doesn't get any better. Like, that's not what's
happening.
But
there's probably something else you could do that would help you not do it.
Yes, yes. And I work on that. But I mean, it's... it's all about forward motion.
Yeah, that's for sure. And for sure,
because that's the only one you control. You're going to get pushed back. You're going to get pushed down. You're going to put. Keep getting up. You keep trying to step forward. You don't stand in place.
Well, but also, and also another thing is, for the last 6 months, 6 months ago, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but 6 months ago, I stopped and realized how much sugar I was eating in my diet. Did I mention this?
I think so. Yeah.
And I cut it out. And then a lot of things that had been bothering me for years that I thought, well, I'm just getting older, went away.
I've heard that from a lot of people.
So, and that actually helps me cope better with everything in general,
yeah.
Right? It helps me sleep better, which helps me cope with. So all of this stuff I'm talking about, even though it's been weighing on my mind heavily and making me lose sleep, I am coping with it better than I was 7 months ago because I've changed my diet
a little
bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's, you often find that there are little things you can do in your life that'll help you cope a little bit, maybe increase your level of exercise or maybe do a different kind of exercise.
I'm finally really, I mean, I always say I'm committed to the gym or whatever. I'm doing pretty good now. I'm doing quite good now going to the gym. I learned because this last time when I had a big gap, it was in the winter, and I had probably about a month where I either didn't go at all, or I probably went like three times in that whole month.
Mm.
And some of that was I was on vacation, things like that. But I come back from that, and I'm suddenly aware how many things went wrong. And my knee hurts when I do stuff, and other things are a deal. And I'm like, but that stopped before because I had been doing it. And so this is the realization. It's like, okay, going to the gym every weekday morning is what you do now. And it's not you should do it to improve yourself. It's that's what you do to live your life.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
That doesn't mean I'm perfect at it or anything, but it's a new way of looking at it.
Yeah, right.
And there's a lot of things that are like that where it's like, oh, but because that's the thing. When you get to our age, there's the whole dithering about things. And sometimes the world just tells you, yeah, you have fewer options than you thought.
Yep, that's right.
And that's the thing. It's like there are some fundamental things about me that I have to go to the gym regularly if I want them. And so it's no longer I should really go to the gym. I'll feel better if I do that. No, there are some basic aspects of living that I am telling myself I require.
Yeah, right.
And the only way to do that is this way. And it's great to sort of have that. And now there's less argument in my own head.
Sure, yep.
Like,
yep.
Now it's not be the better person. It's, no, that's your job.
Yep,
you know,
yep.
To do that.
Yep,
And the gym one's a nice, easy, practical one. But, I mean, there are versions of that.
Yep, agreed, yep.
I have to stop myself sometimes. It's like, don't start thinking that way. It's, you know, that's not going to be anything useful. You have to look at it this way. I am learning to let shit go with other people. People are saying really dumb things. People I care about are saying dumb things, and I am not correcting them. That's a huge new one for me.
Oh, okay.
I'm not talking about shit where people say horrible things. I'm talking about just like dumb shit that I'm like, I'm not actually-ing them.
Yeah.
I mean, just trivia shit and stuff like this. They're saying things, and I'm just like, well, okay, like, for example, well, no, this isn't a good, like, the Igor thing, like, fuck you. But I mean, like, that's the scale of things.
Yeah.
That nowadays, or just, you know, pseudo-political discussions with my friends, and they'll say something, and I want to be like, that's not really what it is. And I'm like, why? Why are you going to do that? What outcome do you hope to get from this? And the answer is, well, I hope for them to agree with me. Do you think that's going to happen? Also, even if that does happen, they might be a little pissy about it. Yeah, but then otherwise they'll never learn. So what happens if they never learn this thing you were going to tell them right now about this nuance of this argument? Absolutely nothing in any of our lives.
Yeah, nothing. That's right.
Okay, then don't say it. And, like, forcing myself to do that now and forcing myself sometimes to just talk slower, to think that shit through and stuff like that. And it becomes normal. It becomes like, not to bring it back to the gym stuff, but what I learned from TT, I now reflexively, when I stand up and walk, contract my abs. Like you're supposed to.
Oh, okay, sure.
To support my weight and my balance and stuff like that. And the way I got there was I very much had to do it. And I spent a long time. I wasn't perfect, but like any time I thought of it, sometimes I'd be walking, I'm like, oh, wait, I got to do that.
Yep.
And now it's a reflex.
Yeah, right.
And that's
right.
Awesome. And that's how these things come around. So maybe the answer, if you're lying in bed feeling bad about decisions you can no longer change, you come up with a thing that will force you to stop. And I don't know what that is. Maybe when you're sitting there like that, maybe you do. Like, it's 2 a.m. This is probably a terrible idea, but I will get up and write.
Well, and actually, it's been a recent thing where I'll do just what you're saying. I'll read. I'll decide, you know, it's pointless for me to lie here. And it's pointless for me to think about this. What would it hurt for me, like you said, to write or to read or to do anything else besides just lay here?
Distracting myself with art, I am discovering, is a great
So
tool sometimes. Like sometimes I'll watch a movie because I don't want to think about the things I'm thinking about. So I will think about the dumb plot of this movie or whatever it is.
I think when I don't do that, when I don't just get up and do something, there's one of two things is going on. One is I know I'll fall asleep if I just lie here a little while longer, which isn't even true. But I think another thing that sometimes comes into it is there a little bit of self-loathing comes in. And
I don't
like,
deserve
sleep. Yeah, I don't. I deserve to feel this way.
I know, I get that.
And I have to catch myself when I'm doing that. Like, don't be such a jerk to yourself. That's dumb, you know?
Yeah.
But so there's a lot of second-guessing and stuff. But, you know, what a lot of this comes down to is, and this is something that most of us know our whole lives, but you can't really appreciate it until you get there, like most things. I mean, you can think you know everything about being a parent, but there's just some things you will not understand until you are one. When you can't, or I don't want to say you can't like it's a choice. You simply will not live your life the same way the older you get. You just won't. Like you said, your choices get narrow, or they get different anyway.
And you learn shit.
And yeah. And
I learned a lot of things I wasted time on when I was younger. Dumb.
And also, by the time you're 50, there's a lot less. Well, I shouldn't say less or more. There's, you know, when you're 20, there's so much stuff that's in the future.
Yep.
So much stuff. And then when you're 50. There's nothing in the future, but it's a lot less stuff, and it's a lot less of a certain kind of stuff, right? It's not going to be kids. It's not going to be.
You see the end.
Yeah, you see the
end. So, like, for me, it was around 40 when I consciously told myself, "Whatever you're thinking you're going to do with your life, by 40, you should at least have a good idea about what it is." Doesn't mean you have to have been progressed in it or successful, but you should not still be finding yourself like you did in your 20s by the time you hit 40. And so I had a serious talk with myself about what I want.
Yeah.
And that, in part, led to me writing again.
Ah, yeah.
That was one of the things. It also led to me cutting out other things in my life that I'm like, this is not what I want to dedicate my energy to. There are specific things that I want to dedicate my energy to. One of them was writing. One of them was my marriage. Things like this. Because I'm like, I'm 40. You don't have to have it all worked out, but you should have a vector at this point. And it doesn't mean you can't change, but you should not just sort of be floating around finding yourself. In that old classic gap year sense, finding yourself.
Mm-hmm.
By 40, that should probably be done, unless something has happened that you now need to make a transformative adjustment.
Divorce or
something is changing in your life. But if you just are still sort of like, oh, I thought I could do this, or maybe I'll work, like, no, find something, start something, do something.
Yeah. Well, it's like I said, I'm not in no way surprised by how different my life is at 50, and I'm not really surprised about any of the ways it's different except for the kid thing. But you really, of course, like just about everything, you really can't fully appreciate it till you get there. And it's different. It's a different.
I'm surprised every day.
It's a different world. Yeah.
Every day I'm surprised at how my life is, how I feel about that. Nothing about me now resembles anything younger me thought would be the case. This is not the life I thought I would have. This is not the life I thought I would want. These are not the things I would do with my days. These are not the things that would be important to me. And each day is surprising.
I don't know if I experience surprise about those types of things. I've changed
so much as a person.
Oh, I have too. I have too. But
well, that's what surprised me, because I didn't see any of it coming. I mean, I knew I would change, but I had no idea
what kinds of changes.
And
yeah.
None of this was on the list. I'm a lot funnier than I thought. I've always been funny, but I'm funnier than I thought I would be.
I've never been funny. I'm still not. So
I'm.
That's stayed the same. That's steady.
Things that are important to me are so different.
Yeah,
than
I mean,
they
I think
were.
That's. I think that's true for a lot of people as they get older.
And stuff that I really felt in my heart and things like that. And I mean, to say nothing of how I assumed my careers would go or my, you know, where I would live. And
yeah, I didn't really have solid ideas about those things, I guess.
I did. They varied. I mean, they went up and down and all over the place. Just none of them looked anything like this.
I sometimes wonder if one of the reasons why a lot of the stuff I tried didn't really work out in the end was because I was always just trying them out. And maybe people around me got the impression, you're not really committed to this. And I was committed to it in my way, but that's true. I wasn't,
yeah.
I wasn't committed to it like this is going to be the rest of my life.
And I was always trying to be, to this day, I essentially brag about the fact that I took 9 intro courses in college. And everybody's like, that's a ton. And I'm like, I wanted to try everything out.
Sure, I took a lot of
intro
courses too.
I did not have a major
even
in my... I had like 3 or 4 that I thought maybe I liked those things.
Right.
But I wanted to try the intro to everything to see. And sure enough, I ended up on goddamn anthropology. And I love goddamn anthropology, even though it hasn't earned me a cent in my life. And I would have had no idea. That is not something that was on my radar. That is not something I probably even could have accurately defined for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially because in my head it was archaeology, it was Indiana Jones shit, and that's not the part I like.
Yeah.
Well,
I didn't know what my major was going to be.
But I mean, I took intro philosophy, I took intro economics, and really liked it. I ended up taking more economics courses and seriously considered that as a major. I took religious studies. I took a lot of ones that I expected to take. Religious studies was always going to be there. Philosophy was always going to be there. Because there was a lot of things like I wanted to try in high school, but I was too busy. You have to take these courses so you can go to college and everything.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
But none of it, I mean, got me here. It's very weird. And we are over time. We didn't get no question, so too bad. If you'd like to tell us how your life is different now that William
is 50. And complain that we didn't draw a question, because that's the whole point of this thing.
Yeah, and yet no one ever complains about that, which is weird. Anyway, yeah, tell us how your life has changed now that William is 50. At the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com.
Well, it didn't change when I became 50. It's been a
thing. Do you like to kick and stretch and kick it in again? I keep meaning to send you that video with Molly Shannon's character.
Yeah.
I'm 50. 50 years old. All right. That's it for us. It's going to be 2 weeks for us, so we're not going to remember who you guys are. But you'll remember, because it will have just been 1 week for you. So see, this is where the time warp alters in your favor. And in the meantime, I don't know, maybe go see Shazam, whatever. In a few weeks here, we got the new Hellboy. I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
I want to see the new Hellboy.
Yep.
And eventually we got Endgame.
Yep.
Starting to get excited.
Really soon.
I just love fucking with my sister-in-law, because she's really, like, traumatized by the trailers now, and, like, all the potential scary, dark people are going to go. And so I just love it. We just text her this shit. I just say, whatever it takes.
Whatever.
Because that's like what they constantly say in that trailer.
Yeah,
so I'm
yeah.
Like, whatever it takes. She's like, but I love. I'm like, no. Whatever it takes. All right. So until next week, whatever it takes.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.